Welcome to EncLive On Air. In today's episode, EncLive teamed up with Cure to present a discussion with David A. Braun, MD, PhD, about his research on determinants of response to immune checkpoint inhibition in patients with renal cell carcinoma. In this exclusive interview, Dr. Braun discussed the rationale for investigating molecular factors that contribute to exceptional immune checkpoint inhibition responses among patients with RCC, as well as the key findings from this study. He also shared how these findings may affect cancer care and influence shared decision-making strategies for patients receiving immunotherapy.
Can you set the stage for our listeners? What was the rationale for conducting this investigation, and what prior data from this realm helped inform the methods of the study?
The search for sort of determinants of what makes immunotherapy, and particularly new checkpoint inhibitors, works is not new. Our group has been involved in this for a long time. Many other groups within kidney cancer and in the broader oncology community. But we took a slightly different approach. And the idea here is, what we're really hoping to get out of immune therapies. And when we look at what the goal is with our current immune checkpoint inhibitors, they're not only to sort of prolong how long people are living for some small amount of time, or to lead to shrinkage of tumor for some relatively short period of a matter of months, but really long-term and dramatic kind of durable responses. That's what we're really hoping for from immune checkpoint inhibitors. And so in the past, a lot of our studies had really been focused on just broadly defining response to treatment or non-response to treatment. But it's the same sort of response criteria that's used for clinical trials. If a drug works for a few months and shrinks the cancer, and then a few months later stops working, that still counts as a response. And that's really not what we're hoping for. And so what we did was try to approach this a little bit differently. And again, this is a really big collaborative effort. It's our group here at Yale, a group of Dana-Farber at MD Anderson. We sort of put our heads together and said, if we're really hoping for these long-term durable responses, let's look at that. What are the factors, the biological or molecular factors, that might determine whether someone has what we termed a sort of exceptional response, which really means deep and durable responses, huge amounts of tumor shrinkage that's really long-lasting. And when we really took a deep dive into that particular criteria, not just any response or tumor shrinkage, but exceptional responses, there's certain things that kind of rose to the surface that we just haven't seen before.
Why is it critical to identify molecular factors contributing to these exceptional responses in metastatic RCC? And how does this advance fields of precision oncology?
You know, I always sort of think in terms of two lines of thinking with respect to finding these molecular determinants of response, and in this case of exceptional response. So one is, it potentially impacts how we might treat our patient, meaning if we know that drug X or therapy X is going to lead to an exceptional response, that's really helpful information to know from just a physician and patient perspective, that we can sort of prognosticate a little bit. We say this has a really high likelihood of working, and there's a reasonably good chance that this might work for a very, very long period of time. So that's helpful in a much more immediate sense. But I think in a longer term sense, I think one of the big hopes for certainly our research group, but I think many others as well, is what can we learn from this that might allow us in a more rational way to build towards the things that lead to exceptional responses. So if we can sort of identify what are the factors that are really driving these exceptional long-term responses, then we kind of have our target in mind. We say, you know, if it's tertiary lymphoid structures, if it's these other sort of things we see within the tumor microenvironment that really are associated with exceptional response, how can we use our new treatments and rationally work towards creating that environment, that condition that's going to be conducive to exceptional responses? And I think that's really the long-term goal is really to enable more of these exceptional responses so that, frankly, they're not so exceptional anymore. They're just going to be the responses that we see.
Diving in a little bit more to the study itself, could you elaborate on the methodologies that were used to analyze the data and sort of tease out these distinct groupings?
Our collaborative group has really sort of put our heads together. So is our group here at Yale and Dana-Farber and MD Anderson. And what we did was really partner with industry that has led large phase 3 trials and that has really well curated clinical data and genomic data. And so what we're able to do is deeply analyze what are genomic factors, mutations that not only affect the tumor biology, but might be immune targets or antigens, and really understand the DNA sequencing element of it, but then also use the RNA sequencing, the transcriptomic data, to really understand the immune microenvironment of these cancers. And so what we did was use that DNA and RNA sequencing approach that was performed on tumors from two large clinical trials within kidney cancer, the CheckMate 214 trial, which was a trial of two immunotherapy drugs, ipilimumab and nivolumab, compared to what was a standard drug at the time, an anti-angiogenic targeted therapy called sunitinib. So that was one clinical trial. And the other clinical trial was another FDA-approved regimen, which is avelumab, a PD-L1 inhibitor, plus axitinib, another one of these targeted therapies, against the common agent sunitinib. So we had sort of two modern regimens, a pure immunotherapy regimen and an immune therapy plus a targeted therapy regimen. And it's sort of armed with this large data set, which was genomic data, transcriptomic data, and well-curated clinical data that we could begin to, one, define what we thought of as exceptional response, really a clinical definition, and then two, really look at how these different genomic and transcriptomic factors might be associated or not with these exceptional responses.
Could you elaborate on some of the study results and how these findings contribute to our understanding of why some patients may respond well to immunotherapy and what this means for patients who lack activations in these pathways?
So there's a few, I think, key lessons that we've sort of learned from this. So one is on the genomic front. So across all solid tumors, people thought a lot of total number of mutations or EMB, total mutation burden, as really being a factor that might predict good responses to immunotherapy. And the rationale is a little bit intuitive for that, which is if you have more mutations, you have more potential targets for the immune system, are called neoantigens. And so you have essentially more shots on goal for the immune system to recognize and attack the cancer. And that's been true for basically the majority, or at least a large number of solid tumors, and just hasn't been the case for kidney cancer. Our group in the past has looked at it and many others as well. And we've just found no association between tumor mutation burden or neoantigen load and response to therapy. But now when we tease it apart, we actually see that that's not quite true, that when we look at exceptional response specifically, those patients who had exceptional response, those tumors were really enriched for neoantigens. So those are new immune targets formed by mutations. But they're not any mutation or any neoantigens. They were particularly clonal neoantigens. So these were ones that are present not just in a small fraction of the cancer cells, but in 100% of the cancer cells. And this is something that's different. When we look overall at all responders, we don't see that pattern. When we look at the people who have just short-lived responses, we don't see that pattern. It's only when we look at exceptional response that we see this enrichment for clonal neoantigens. And so this is an immediate sort of step towards understanding what are the effective immune targets in kidney cancer, that when patients have tumors with lots of clonal neoantigens, that is one key driver of exceptional responses to immunotherapy. The second, and that was really, I'll mention, that was really with that CheckMate 214 cohort, the pure immunotherapy cohort that we see this. The second is looking at the RNA-seq data from that JAVELIN Renal 101 cohort, the immunotherapy plus a targeted therapy. And there, when we looked at the transcriptomic data, we started to ask the question, what were the pathways and genes that were enriched in exceptional response? And we tend to, honestly, naively, to expect things like T-cell genes to come up, because we think of T-cells as one of the main soldiers of the immune system, one of the main sort of anti-tumor effector cells. And we saw that too. We saw CD8 T-cells as being enriched. But we actually saw a lot of pathways related to B-cell signaling. And B cells is not something that you typically think of a lot in an anti-cancer setting. There are groups that have described this within kidney cancer and beyond. And what sort of immediately rose to the top of our mind is that within certain cancer types, you can have these aggregates of B cells and T cells that form together that almost look like they're almost miniature lymph nodes in a way, but within the tumor microenvironment itself. They're called tertiary lymphoid structures, or TLSs. And those TLSs have been certainly in certain cancer types like melanoma, been found to be really important for mounting effective anti-tumor responses. And that's exactly what we see here, that when we now look at good gene expression signatures for these tertiary lymphoid structures, we can see that it is really these TLSs, these tertiary lymphoid structures, that are enriched in the tumor microenvironment. And so it looks like there's really multiple pathways to get to exceptional response. Some are through classic T-cell targets like clonal neoantigens. Others is through formation of these tertiary lymphoid structures. And then we actually found an interesting signature of sort of increased metabolic activity as something that we're sort of now investigating as a potential another branch to get to exceptional response. But I think this is sort of opening up what are the avenues to get there. And I think we have now a couple of leads to pursue.
Now, for the patients who are listening, how would you translate that into how that will affect their ultimate care?
We sort of think very deeply about what is it that patients are sort of ultimately looking for. And I think to know that, the best answer is you have to go to the patients themselves. And so Dina Battle, who's a wonderful advocate in the kidney cancer community, she runs a group called KC Cure. She's actually done these surveys of what patients are sort of looking for the treatment of metastatic cancer. And when you look at it, there's a lot of things that are important and that rise to the list and that are meaningful. But without that, the top things are really trying to get to long-term durable responses. In an ideal world, really cures, really trying to get to a point where you have long-term disease control. And I think in the past, in the pure targeted therapy era, that wasn't sort of an achievable thing necessarily for kidney cancer, at least for the far majority of patients. I'd say even in the modern immune checkpoint era, the majority of patients aren't able to get that level of benefit. But some are. And I think the key is, now that we're starting to understand the factors that might allow some patients to have those exceptional responses to this immune therapy, the hope is that we really can learn from that. And we do have to push this forward. How can we learn from that to make it, again, not so exceptional, so that we understand the factors that can lead to these long-term durable responses, the ones that patients are really hoping for and, you know, asking for, and how can we sort of rationally design our next set of experiments and ultimately clinical trials to move towards those sort of exceptional responses. I think that's really the goal of this kind of research.
And then for these patients who are currently undergoing immunotherapy, how may your research influence their treatment outcomes or shared decision making?
Yeah, I think the short-term key is, I guess, a little bit of a message of hope that this there really is the potential for these exceptional responses. And I think that's something we have to balance in our clinic. I see patients with kidney cancer every week that, you know, where we are today, and we have to be realistic about that, but also what we hope to be in the future, that where we are today, that the majority of patients, unfortunately, are not getting that long-term benefit, but it's also not zero. There really are truly a set of patients that even today, we don't have a perfect way of saying those in a clinical test up front right now, but there really are a set of patients who might have exceptional long-term benefit from immune therapy. And that has to factor into our thinking and their thinking. And then the hope is that in the coming years, that, you know, many, many groups, not just our sort of collaborative group, but many, many others that are working on kidney cancer nationwide and internationally, really are pushing the field forward so that we take lessons like these and can really make those exceptional responders not just a small fraction, but really larger and larger and larger. And so I think that's kind of the lesson I hope to take from that I always want to be honest and practical where we are today, that that's still not the majority of patients, but that hopefully with the lessons learned, we can begin to sort of move towards that. You know, there's certainly a number of interesting studies coming out. I think it's always important when there's larger clinical trials that have reported results, but also when there's an attempt to understand, you know, large clinical trials have a big group of patients to really understand, as we're doing, what are some of the factors that might really influence whether a drug works or not. The COSMIC 313 trial, which is a big phase 3 trial, one of the first, maybe the first sort of modern phase 3 trial of comparing now immune therapy doublet as the comparator arm against a triplet therapy, two immune therapies plus a targeted therapy, so ipilimumab plus nivolumab versus ipilimumab plus nivolumab plus cabozantinib. And I think the hope is that we'll see not just the clinical data, which is obviously really important, it's critical, things like overall survival, but also trying to understand the biology. Are there specific subsets of patients and their tumors that might really benefit from one type of therapy or another? So that's the kind of work that I think is going to be really important.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.